Welcome back to another edition of the Business of Sports with Andrew Brand. We're going to talk to Dave Purdom. He's from ESPN Chalk, kind of an expert I go to about gambling issues, about the DFS merger, DraftKings and FanDuel, two people coming together, Hatfields and McCoys. And we'll also talk about Vegas, the NHL's going there. What about the NFL, the Raiders, all of that ahead with Dave Purdom. First, a word from Elite Team Blankets. You can now save 25% off your favorite NFL and college team blankets. Denali Micro Plush NFL team blankets from a Northwest company made right here in the USA. They're actually two blankets sewn into one with technology, keeps you comfortable in any temperature. Machine washable, gets softer with each wash. Now, enter promo code TIGERS, all caps, T-I-G-E-R-S. Free shipping, 25% off. It won't last. Free shipping, 25% off at EliteTeam.com. Made right here in the USA, perfect gift for the holiday season. EliteTeam.com, the official blanket of pure fandemonium. Happy holidays.
Contracts, salary caps. Why do our favorite teams make some of the moves they do? It's usually the money. It's time for the Business of Sports with Andrew Brandt.
Special guest today, someone that I've admired for a while in covering what I think is a bigger and bigger issue in sports, gambling. I'm really lucky to have Dave Purdom from ESPN. He covers gambling for ESPN Chalk and has been a valued resource for me and so many others on what's going on in sports and gambling. Dave, welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me, Andrew.
Always enjoy talking to you, and we'll get to some specifics, of course, with the merger, the big daily fantasy merger, and what's going on in Vegas with NHL and the Raiders. But I guess I'd sort of start with giving you kind of an open blank canvas on, I know it's pretty vague, but the state of gambling in sports today.
I think currently we're witnessing more momentum to expand legalized sports betting in the U.S. than we ever have since the federal prohibition was put in place, certainly since then, since 1992. As you know, it's been a very taboo subject for the sports leagues for decades. Bud Selig has called it the ultimate evil, being sports betting. But now we're seeing a tone change. We've had Adam Silver come out, and the NBA supports that we need to legalize sports betting and kind of bring it out of this unregulated market. We're seeing the daily fantasy companies rise to the top. We're also starting to see a lot of these things that are in-game prediction type games. There's a company called WinView, Ring It. There's one other one that's coming out. And they're offering, you know, where you can make your picks during the game almost play by play, and your picks become basically your fantasy team. And you can put your money up and compete against other players. So I think in the long term, we're growing quickly towards legalization. I think we're going right now through the normalization process to kind of get people used to having more of a financial stake in sports.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned Bud Selig. And in addition to my media responsibilities, I teach sports law and run a sports law program. And yeah, it's traditionally been the Bud Selig view. It's the scourge. It's the, in fact, the first commissioner of all of sports, Judge Landis, kind of came to power after the Black Sox scandal in 1920, and he was, you know, charged with cleaning up the game. I guess, you know, and after we go through Pete Rose and we go through Alex Karras and Paul Hornung and we go through Tim Donaghy, what is it, Dave, about what barriers are being broken down? Is it just, hey, come on, this is not so bad? I mean, is there some inflection point that's happened in the past few years that really seems to be breaking down these walls?
I think we're starting to hear more about exactly how much is wagered on sports in the U.S. And when you start talking about hundreds of billions of dollars, I think the sports leagues see that it's gotten to a point where it's an opportunity, where in years past, when we didn't really have these estimates coming out, maybe we didn't know how much money was being wagered, and we still don't have exact numbers. Let's be honest here. We've been in the offshore sportsbook world, so your local bookmakers aren't exactly, you know, opening up their books and saying this is how much is being wagered. But, you know, I talked to one off the record, $1 billion a month during the NFL regular season is how much they're handling. Wow. That's a lot. I mean, if you think that for the whole year in all of sports in Nevada, $4 billion was wagered. So if one site was getting $1 billion a month, that's a lot. So I think the amount of money is one of the things that is triggering this change. I also think, you know, the acceptance and popularity of daily fantasy sports has also kind of brought that to the forefront. People are starting to see and question. There's a lot of hypocrisy in that stance to support, you know, having a financial stake on player performance, but not on the game. What's the difference there? You and I have discussed that before.
Yeah.
So I do think those are the acceptance of fantasy sports.
Yeah, and that segues to talking about that. I mean, you and I have talked for years about this. DraftKings and FanDuel a year ago jumped on the scene, what I said created mindshare with their blast of advertising, barrage of advertising on all, specifically the NFL games. And they did seem like the Hatfields and McCoys, and they did seem like at each other's throats for so long. And as you reported here in mid-November, a merger. It's happening, and we'll get to sort of what it means, but how is this happening when they hated each other so much and they've gone through so much legislation, litigation, fighting, and now they end up partners? How has that happened?
It's been remarkable. It has been just a huge, huge change between those two companies who you're accurately saying that these guys were rivals. I mean, there were intense, heated shouting matches at gaming conferences when both of the company representatives were there. It was well known throughout the industry. Now, you mentioned the second part. They've been through so much, the litigation and the lobbying. They actually say, when you talk to Jason Robbins, who is the CEO of DraftKings, and Nigel Eccles, who is the CEO of FanDuel, they think that working together on those legislative, you know, issues kind of brought them closer together. They started to think, look, this guy, my competitor, is not the evil here. He's not the real one that's going to take us down. But these regulators and these legislators, they could. So they started working together. The second part of why they had to do this is, you know, it was expensive. All the litigation, all the lobbying efforts cost them a lot of money, took a toll on their bottom line. And there were some nervous investors out there that, you know, said, hey, look, we need to fix something. And the way to do this is to merge. So, you know, those are the two elements that kind of change. The companies start working closer together, and then they were kind of hurting on cash. They settled with New York Attorney General for $12 million, $6 million for each company. Have to pay that installment. Not that everybody has $6 million laying around to do it, but to have to put it in and pay it in installments kind of signaled, boy, these companies are, you know, a little cash-strapped this time. So the money was also a big factor in why this had to happen.
Yeah, and you know, you mentioned New York and Attorney General Schneiderman. That came out about a year ago, and we sort of followed that. I covered that for ESPN. It's interesting that, you know, he did talk about this sort of degenerative aspect and sports addiction and compulsive behavior about fantasy sports when, you know, you and I talked about the hypocrisy. What about lotteries? What about all these sanctioned events from New York, such as lotteries? Was this all, I mean, is it that obvious that Schneiderman's play was all a regulation angle to get his piece of the pie? It just seemed like so transparent all the way through.
It certainly seemed to be that way. He had a lot of donors from the casino interests that I'm sure were in his ear a little bit about this. As far as the problem gambling, now that, you know, people bring up the lottery like you did, and there's legal clarity with the lottery,
right,
and all their forms of gambling. Daily Fantasy really didn't have that. They didn't really have extensive problem gaming, you know, programs put in place to regulate that and watch for that at the time. This is the whole time they're denying that this is a form of gambling. So they didn't really, it was kind of tough for them. Well, do we put these things in place? And people say, hey, wait, I thought you weren't gambling. How can I have a gambling problem? Or you know, do we just kind of keep that down on the down low a little bit and push it to the side? And I think those factors came into play a little bit. It was kind of, I keep on telling them, you know, when people start, whether you think daily fantasy is gambling or not. And in my opinion, it's not exactly slots or roulette where it's complete luck, but there's some gambling to it for sure. And when you keep telling people that, hey, we're not gambling, to the average person that's not real familiar with the laws, this sure does look a lot like gambling. And if I'm having somebody tell me it's not, I'm looking at them as disingenuous. And it made people mad. It rubs people the wrong way. So I think that also kind of fueled the fire for Schneiderman and everybody else that got involved.
So where are we with Dan? I think the one thing we learned from Daly, at least I did, in terms of these two massive companies, at least massive in the market share for Daly, you may correct this, but I think they're about 90% of the market. Mm-hmm. We look at them having financial issues. Now, that'll be helped out, ameliorated with the merger. But how big a business is Daly Fantasy? I mean, I think it gets so many headlines and people are into it, but it's really kind of a small piece of the gambling pie, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. It's dwarfed by the amounts it's bet, the hundreds of billions of dollars that leave to be bet traditionally on point spreads and things like that. Yeah. The amount, you know, of entry fees in Daly Fantasy is just completely dwarfed by that. That's, you know, the numbers are, I want to say it's 5 million people have played Daly Fantasy. And they say 57 million play fantasy sports overall. So it's still even a small portion of the fantasy world, not only the sports gaming world.
I think what Daly's done, and I want you to comment on this, is sort of help bring down the walls a little more, like we talked about the barriers. Mm-hmm. We have investment in Dan DraftKings from Major League Baseball, investment in FanDuel from the NBA, investment in DraftKings from not the NFL, but two of its owners, Kraft and Jones. So obviously these leagues are embracing it because it's such a great fan engagement tool. I'm not sure the leagues have even called it gambling or not gambling. They just seem to like it. Or maybe they do call it not gambling because it involves not team outcomes, but just player outcomes.
Yeah, that's been the talking point. They seem to say are against gambling on the outcome of games. But, you know, Daly Fantasy, which hinges on you know, your team of players and their statistical output, they're not as nervous about that impacting the outcome of the game. And I think that's fair. You know, it's going to be difficult to fix a game for the outcome or for fix a game for fantasy purposes, regardless. But I can see why, you know, it would be more difficult to possibly compromise a game for fantasy purposes. You'd have to wait until, you know, a tournament maybe be decided by the Monday night game or something like that, and then try to get one of the players. It would just be very, very difficult. You know, they did – Adam Silver, I thought, really had the best kind of description of what Daly Fantasy is. He says, you know, I don't think it's completely sports betting, you know, all on one traditional point spread bet. I don't think it's that, but it's certainly on that spectrum at some point. So I agree with him right there. You know, again, the object of both games, both sports betting and Daly Fantasy, you're trying to predict the performance of players and to get those correct players to gather the most points, whether it equals points to win the game or it equals points to win your fantasy contest. The thing you're doing is still, the process you're going through is very, very similar. And that's why I definitely think it's, even if you don't want to call it a form of gambling, I definitely think it's a form of sports betting.
Yeah, and I think what you've talked about with Silver, who seems to be the most progressive commissioner on this issue and others, is, you know, finding a way to be prepared if and when this all becomes legalized. And and a monetization angle, which of course is going to be key with all these leagues looking for new sources of revenue. I mean, that's where we're going here, correct?
Oh, absolutely. They've begun partnering with these data companies, sports data companies out of Europe. Sport Radar is the most prominent one. They almost, all the leagues almost have a deal with them. I think Major League Baseball has one with Bet Genius, another kind. But they're trying to get a share of the data that fuels sports betting and it fuels Daly Fantasy. So that's what I think is probably their initial plan in terms of generating revenue from this. Maybe there's some marketing opportunities, advertising opportunities in the future. We'll see. But right now, those are the biggest signs to me, at least, that they are, hey, looking at this as a potential revenue opportunity.
Yeah, and speaking of these leagues, now let's talk about Vegas. Vegas, of course, the home, the symbol of gambling in the United States. Much in the news about the Raiders.
they've got a deal, sort of sailed through the Nevada legislature all the way to the governor's pen. No problem at all. Remains to be seen how Oakland and the NFL owners respond to that. We hear now, just today when we're recording, that Oakland's preparing an offer or has an offer ready to go with the Raiders. No word from the Raiders. You know, you haven't covered this the way I have in terms of the league and franchise relocation, but from a gambling angle, are you shocked that it looks like there's a chance this could happen with the Raiders? Is it just the next step of the gambling transformation in this country with sports leagues?
I think I'm continuing to be shocked by this. Just from covering it, you know, just as early as 3 to 4 years ago, and reading deposition testimony from Commissioner Goodell, mm-hmm. and Commissioner Sieg, we mentioned just how, you know, despised they thought about gambling and sports betting as the ultimate evil. It continues to shock me, even though we're 4 or 5 years down the road now. Las Vegas Raiders, when it first came out, I think I was one of the crowds like, no way, that's not going to happen. Hmm. And now look how far we've come.
What do you think's done that?
Well, I think Davis was pushing the issue here.
Yeah.
I think it's pretty known among the ownership circles that he's kind of one of the outcasts a little bit. You know, he's pushing the issue on this a little bit. NHL moving to Las Vegas, taking a chance at that market already, probably helped us a little bit along as well.
Yeah, you bring up the NHL. I think that as we speak, they're working on their name, but the Las mm-hmm. Vegas team starting next year, you know, what will be allowed betting-wise on the NHL team? And this, of course, a model for if and when an NFL team goes there.
Absolutely. NHL will have 30 days before the season kicks off next year to contact Nevada Gaming Control and request that they not offer betting on their games involving the Las Vegas mm. franchise. They have not contacted. There's been no contact as recently as a couple weeks ago. I talked to the GC, said no, they haven't been heard from the NFL or the NHL on this. So the gaming interests don't think there's going to be an issue there. Don't think these leagues are going to come out and say, hey, we don't want you to take bets on this game. But obviously that's in their best interest, the gaming people there. So we haven't heard from the leagues on that. Think it would be silly to prohibit it just because it's not going to stop anybody from betting on your game. They'll just log on to their offshore sportsbook and place their wager that way. So I would much rather, if I was a league commissioner, to have the money going through a regulated environment.
Yeah, I mean, it really points up something you and I have talked about, I've written about, and you asked me about when we traded roles here. These leagues really need this sort of gambling czar to really delineate what is right, what is wrong, what can be done, what can't be done. Because as soon as this NHL team goes, there's going to be a ton of questions, and maybe the NFL is waiting to see how they dip their toe in the water.
Yeah, I agree. I think you're spot on, and they need somebody to really be the leader, be the guy on top of this that's paying attention to this. NFL currently has, I believe, there's a senior counsel in charge of the gambling role, but I'm sure it's one of 50 elements that he has to look at right now. So there's a lot of questions. I think there's still a lot of naivety about how sports betting works from the league standpoint. It just seems silly to me that they are concerned about the legal part of sports betting, the legal market, and just kind of don't even worry about this massive illegal market that we have that far dwarfs the legal one.
Yeah, I mean, two quick stories. One we've shared. One, when I was with the Packers, I used to call when we would have our fantasy football drafts. Two rules. We had scouts and we had executives pick teams. Two rules. No money and no Packers drafted. But even with that, as I told you, Dave, I had to call the league. I didn't know who to call. I called one of the lawyers I dealt with. Can we do this? And his answer ranged from we didn't have this conversation to just don't tell anyone. So that's just that fear of something kind of out of whack. And then the other story, not with me and my experience, but just seeing the Tony Romo example where, you know, the fantasy football convention canceled, not because of fantasy, as we just talked about, they embrace fantasy, but because it's connected to a casino, the venue was. And it just seems so odd to me. And now we're talking about a team in Vegas.
Absolutely. The Tony Romo thing was scheduled at the Sands Convention Center. That is, you walk through the hallways, get all the way down through the Venetian Casino, where they have this bright red, shiny sports book there, and you get to the convention center. But, you know, it's a ways away. And again, why is the locality of a sports book, when I have one in my pocket wherever I go,
that's right,
really matter? It doesn't. And I don't get that part of it.
Yeah. And of course, the Saints train every training camp at the Greenbrier, which has a massive casino. One of its features, the Packers, as I know, stay overnight the night before home games next to a casino. So yeah, there is that hypocrisy. We'll leave on this, Dave. Give me, as we look towards December and January, what are some wagers out there that you find interesting looking at the big board going forward?
I always like to see how many people are betting on which Super Bowl pick. The Patriots right now are the favorites. Cowboys and Seahawks are the second teams, right there, real close, those three teams. But it was kind of funny when I asked which team had attracted the most bets to win the Super Bowl at this point. I mean, that starts from when they put the odds up way in the spring all the way to now. And it was the 4-6 Green Bay Packers have more bets to win the Super Bowl than any other team. While betting is becoming more prevalent in the U.S., I don't think we're getting much better at it.
Wait, let's go back. The Packers, that was before the season, or that's now when the odds have gotten much bigger?
It's current, all the way through, all bets.
Okay.
That started when the odds are put up. They put them up, as early as February, first couple weeks after the Super Bowl. So all the bets on the Super Bowl odds up until this week, right now, the Green Bay Packers have more than anybody else. And that's at multiple sports books.
Yeah, I guess I would see that, having been there and seen Packer Nation, especially looking, I'm sure everyone's pronouncing him dead now, but you never know with Aaron Rodgers. So we'll see.
80-1 right now. If you're going to play him now, grab him now.
Grab him now. 80-1 on the best or second best quarterback in the league to make the Super Bowl.
Exactly.
Hey, not bad. Dave, it's been great. Really a great update on sports gambling and the fantasy world, and even some interesting news out of Vegas right now. We'll look forward to keeping in touch with you on all these things. We'll have you back soon. Dave Purdom, ESPN Chalk, thanks.
Thank you, Andrew. Happy holidays.
Same to you, Dave.
Thanks for listening to The Business of Sports with Andrew Brand. Make sure to subscribe to this podcast so you never miss an episode. You can also get additional insider insight by listening to the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, Fantasy Feast, Even Money, and College Draft Podcast, all at rostucker.com or wherever podcasts are found.